Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by Jump Cloud for MSPs.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Tate Talks. Today I had a great chat with Paul Lloyd of Sellerly. Now you may well know Paul if you're an MSP, certainly in the UK. I've been seeing him at lots of events and kind of being the go-to sales and marketing expert. But we found out a lot more about him, how he got into the industry, what he's up to now, and how we can help your MSP. Hope you enjoy. Hi, Paul. Welcome to Tate Talks. Thanks for joining us today. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure, and I'm doing all right. So well, I'm in my 15th century cottage in the middle of Dorset, where it rained every day for the last 4 months, I think.
Well, it looks idyllic from the photographs I've seen.
Yeah, it's idyllic. I mean, my wife's going to look at an old Land Rover on Friday so that we can constantly drive out the end of the road. Because we have a Ford at the end of our road, which when we moved in, we thought there's no way on earth that that's ever going to flood. But Monday of this week, in the middle of the road, it was a foot deep. So we're transferring her from a Mercedes A-Class to a 1995 Defender 90 Land Rover.
Yeah, probably slightly more practical. So we're going off topic already. We've not even started the topics, but how did you end up down there?
I mean, you know, I started life in the Midlands. I was actually born in Birmingham a very long time ago in B1. So you don't get much more Birmingham than B1. And then parents moved out north to Staffordshire as the first generation of people who bought their own home. And I moved south to Surrey with SCC. So I set up their southern region a long time ago. And we were always going to move somewhere else. You know, I hesitate to say to retire because I haven't quite managed that yet. But, we had a 4-bedroom house in Epsom at the top of the market and decided that was the right time to move, and we wanted to move south. So we went to one Kent, and then we went all the way along the coast looking. I wanted to be half an hour from the sea, you know, somewhere pleasant. And we went all the way along the coast to Lyme Regis, which was a bit too far. And then we started coming back, and then we settled just outside of Wimborne. So I have this cottage, which I often put photographs on because it's the only, I get more interaction with people when I put a photograph of the thatched cottage on LinkedIn than I do when I write something meaningful. And we've got an acre, and we've actually got some stables, but they're full of furniture at the moment. So there will be another move. So at some point in the not too, well, probably 10 years, we'll have to move somewhere else because we'll be too old to cope with the garden and everything else. But as it stands at the moment, and when the sun shines, you couldn't wish to be in a better place. When it's dreary and it's raining, as you can see, but other people can't, obviously, I'm in a 3x2 meter wooden cell. Well, you can see my beams. These are original 15th century beams. So we don't know what went on. King Charles I could have actually eaten in this house. As a thought for you.
Absolutely. Well, it looks great. And I'm hearing you loud and clear. So I guess the modern technology must have made its way down there as
I
well.
I have BT cable, fibre. But when I was in Epsom, I had 600 meg down. And here I've got 37, and it doesn't seem to make a massive amount of difference. So all I can assume is I was overpaying when I was in Epsom. But and so far, I've not had too many issues with this. I have looked at the Elon Musk satellite arrangement, but he reminds me too much of a Bond villain. So I'm sort of reluctant to go that route as it stands at the minute.
Okay. Well, I think I agree with you on the connectivity. I think I only get around 40 meg or something. It doesn't seem to make the slightest bit of difference to what I do. So I think the greater the number doesn't really make any difference. Anyway, I guess where we ought to start and jump back to question one, because I feel like people have been found out where you live without knowing anything about you at this point. So tell us maybe a little bit about yourself and maybe some interesting snippet or a bit of information that people that do know you probably don't know.
I started my career working for the National Coal Board Computer Centres. So I started working on computers before most people even knew what it was. If I say that I was working with 12-inch tapes, everybody kind of looks at me in a funny way. But if you imagine those tape drives that you see on the old James Bond films where the tapes are going backwards and forwards, my first job was to number 15,000 of them from 1 to 15,000. So that was my introduction to work. And I did shift work within the computer center for 4 or 5 years and then moved out to be a swimming pool attendant. And I did a series of management qualifications. So I'm a qualified boiler operator, squash coach, swimming teacher. Working for local authority, which at the time, didn't fit well. And then I ended up moving into what at the time was the channel, but it wasn't really a channel. It was more like a very small brook. So started selling Apple computers and, again, before anybody had even heard of it. And so I've been in IT sales in one way, shape or form since the beginning. You will have heard me say this before, but the first computer I sold was an Apple IIe with 8 meg of memory and a 5 gigabyte hard drive and a green screen and printer. And it was, I think it was at the time, and this was a long time ago, it was about £3,500. So, and we used to make 40%, which is the most interesting part of it, I guess. So from there, I went to work for SCC in the Midlands. I set up their southern region, built their region from 3 or 4 million up to just shy 90 over the course of 6-7 years. Left there. And to some extent, since then, I've done lots of different things in lots of different areas. So I've worked for vendors. So I understand the channel from a vendor perspective. I've worked for big partners and little partners. I've done some work for distribution, but not a massive amount. So I've done a number of projects for distribution. And I think what that gives me overall is to be able to contextualize most of what goes on in the channel. So, I've had 30 years experience, which is 30 years experience and not 20 times 18 months. All too often, I think people have, they just do the same thing over and over again. 18 months, 2 years, change jobs, do the same again. But I'm not that sort of person. So I've sort of more or less done what I wanted, which it's nice to be able to say that because you pay for that in some respects. But I've worked for vendors. I've worked in security since 2005 when we were selling security to enterprise. So all of the issues that the MSP community today have, we were having in 2005 with enterprise. I ran ClearSwift in the UK, which was a security vendor for just shy of 2 years. I got involved and owned a share of a CAD business for a short while. In the last sort of 4 or 5 years, all of my work's is with the MSP community. So what I'm doing is I'm helping them because typically their biggest challenge, because most of them are techies, is sales and I tend to call it, for me, it's sales and marketing with a small M. So it's all about lead generation and it's all about building inquiries. It's not the kind of esoteric, fluffy stuff that the colour and in department do. I'm very much more sort of pragmatic in that respect. I work with clients. Some of them have got salespeople, some of them haven't. I act as a sales manager on the outside if that's what they need, because typically they haven't got that experience. And also just the straightforward commercial knowledge. So, I know a lot of people, and I can generally sort of help people around. And I mean, I, you know, I'll talk to anybody. So you know, I've got, as I say, I've got projects in distribution. I've got a couple of vendors I'm speaking to, but typically they are the bulk of what I do is for MSPs around the sort of 1.3, 1.5 million revenue, where they're having to do things, I would argue, properly but differently to be able to grow their businesses and actually go up to the next stage. And that tends to be where I think most MSPs have the problem to start with, and then they get to kind of two, a little over 2 million, and then there's another step up. I don't tend to deal with much bigger companies, because once they get to the kind of 4 or 5 million, they've got a sales manager or they've got a sales director, and then there's a lot of ego. And I've done my lots of ego, so I don't need those, those issues typically. And I do a certain amount of speaking, so I'm speaking at the MSP show in April, and I do have some paid speaking at the various conferences, not as much as I'd like. So if anybody would like to approach me on that, I'm happy to listen. But it's an area that I've done more in the past than I tend to would like to do more in the future.
Great. Well, yeah, thanks for that. I mean, I always like that first question, some interesting fact, because I've known you quite a long time, but I never knew you were a swimming teacher or a qualified swimming teacher. So yeah, you
I'm
learn
also
something
a,
new.
I'm also a fan of Take That, the old Take That, and I've listened to the Archers every week for probably the last 30 years. But I tend to keep that to myself. But it's surprising actually when you tell people you listen to the Archers, how many people actually listen to the Archers. But
Yeah, I used to listen to it a lot more than I did when I was in the car a lot of the time, but and then I went through a spell of listening to it on Sundays, the kind of omnibus, but I've sort of dropped out the habit. But you might get me back into it. I
well,
might
the
give it another
beauty of
go.
it is, you see, I started the same. So I used to leave the office at 7 o'clock. So my working day would, I'm not necessarily finished, but I'd leave the office at 7. So driving home, I would listen to the 13 minutes from 2 minutes past 7 to 7:15. Then the boys started playing rugby on a Saturday morning, on a Sunday morning. So I would then spend that in the car, and what I'd missed in the week, I'd listen to on the omnibus on a Sunday. And then, of course, we got the internet, and now you can listen to it whenever and wherever you are. So, you know, I'll go a couple of weeks without listening and then catch up. So I download every day, I download the Archers podcast, and then I listen to that as and when's appropriate. So there you go.
No,
There's your
that is
tip.
interesting. Yeah, and absolutely. I definitely wasn't expecting any of that. I guess going back to your earlier point about the kind of magnetic tape reels. I mean, that's kind of when I started. We was as a programmer, we were storing programs and data on magnetic tapes like that. But so I used to have to change the tapes all the time. Not 15,000 of them, so, which is a slightly difference in scale. We were a very small software house rather than something like that. But it must have been quite a, I mean, did you miss a number? That's kind of what about
Well,
you
this
know
is
you.
it's the thing is, and I think we've all done these things throughout life, haven't we? There's always something which it becomes repetitive, which is tedious in some respects and should be easy, but you'd be surprised how often you do. So, you know, you sort of go through it and then, you know, you end up missing a number, or you sort of get a couple out of order, or you'll and what they were literally stickers with numbers on, you know. So there was a sticker with a one, five, and you had to put them depending on what tapes you had. I mean, the ones that we were using at the time had got sort of a plastic ring around the outside, which flipped open. So it wasn't the, you know, the original ones went into like a plastic box and you had to take them out. But these had got this sort of plastic rim with a that would be automatically opened by the tape drive. And so the numbers were put down the outside rim. But yes, there were many times that I got the number wrong, but you didn't then find out till you'd done 10 or 12. And obviously it's not that complicated then, because you just have to fill it in. But it's a lesson in life, I think, that even the simplest things you've still got to concentrate on. But you know, I don't know, 16, 17 years old, so I wasn't going to complain about it necessarily.
No, absolutely not. Just got on with it. So let's move forward slightly then, because you mentioned that you like to speak to people and speak in the MSPs. We met at a CompTIA event. I remember I was thinking yesterday, trying to remember where it was, but I'm not. I'm assuming maybe Manchester, but I'm not sure, or Birmingham possibly, but I can't remember. But I know you. I've seen you on the road a lot at CompTIA events. I know that you're running Tech Tribe events now, and you say you're speaking at lots of different things. I've seen you speak, do a sales presentation a few years ago at one of the events in London. So I know that you speak to lots of MSPs, and you also say you speak to vendors and to a lesser extent distributors. But during those conversations, what are the kind of challenges that you're hearing from MSPs these days?
I think in the MSP space, I guess because of what I do, it tends to all be around sales and marketing. So they've all, I think, almost without exception, the MSPs are owned and run by technical people, and they've all got their business to where it's at, whatever that is, on recommendation and referral. So, many of them started between 2000 and 2010 because following the millennium, they got made redundant and they got a mate down the road who needed some help, who's got a friend around the corner who needed some help, and they've kind of built it over time. And they've probably accrued, 35, 40 customers over that time. And if they get to the 40 customers, they're around about the million part revenue-wise. But then to take the next step, so I want to grow, then you've got to change. You can't do that on recommendation and referral because you're losing business. So your recommendation and referral simply tops it up. So, what you find is you reach, and it might not be a million, it might be 900,000. If there's a partnership, what I found is it's around about the 1.5 million. So if there's two of you, you don't get two times, but you're going to get more. So it's then all about how do we find new customers? How do we win new customers? How do we get, more leads? Which And that tends to be the major thing. I mean, I do think that because a lot of the technical people like shiny new things, there's a tendency that they'll change software in-house within their business without the necessity for it. But fundamentally, that's where they're at. Now, I think their market has changed dramatically from when they started. So I don't think the MSPs are there these days for doing support. They should be delivering technological solutions to their clients because the SME community in this country is badly served by the IT industry as a whole, in my opinion. How do they help their clients grow? How do they help their clients become more efficient rather than waiting to be asked in some respects? But so that's their challenge. That there are some issues around. I mean, the one that nobody wants to talk about is around product sales, because too many of them, in my mind, shy away from that. But there are issues around that, and they want to grow, so they add more engineers and whatever. I think recognizing and planning for where they want to be is one of the hardest parts that they have. I mean, when I the first thing that I have to do is change the mindset from, we might do this, to we want to achieve this number, and to get to this number, we need to do this, and we need to do this, and actually then doing the execution of that. But there's some really good, solid, profitable businesses that, they don't need to be much bigger than they are. And growth isn't the be all and end all. If you're happy with with your lot, as long as you're doing the job properly, of course it works. Now, with vendors, I think the biggest challenge with vendors, and I say this to you working as a vendor, is that you don't understand end user sales. So all too often, you're not, I don't think vendors typically help the channel because they're not helping them with their weaknesses to be able to sell it through. And you have to sell, well, the vendors, let's not make this personal. So the vendors have to sell products to exist, but the MSPs products is almost second string to their support. So there's a dynamic there which If we could get it sorted out, then everybody would win that little bit more. But vendors are driven by numbers and products and numbers of products, and MSPs are driven by their services and what they do. But there's very little support, true sort of business support for for the MSPs to go out to the end users. And a lot of that's because the vendors themselves haven't done it. People who work for vendors go and work for vendors and then go and work for vendors. Very few vendor people actually move down into the channel. Some will go the other way. I mean, some of the channel people will go to vendors, but typically, vendors don't, they don't get into the weeds, as it were. I mean, distribution's an interesting one because they kind of fall between the two stores, don't they? But they've still got to sell products. So, they're all driven by selling products. And if you look at a lot of the American vendors are now VC owned, so they don't care about customers and they don't care about staff. They care about returning money to the VCs. So it's, they're driving their sort of motivation and drive is almost at odds with the MSP channel. Seems to work. So, but I think you've got to want, I think if you've got an appreciation for each level and what they're looking for, then you can improve, you can start to improve those relationships. But, the vendors rule the roost to a large extent. Microsoft, I've maintained for a long time that Microsoft will go direct. And I keep being told whenever I say that out loud, that that's not the case. But Microsoft are only interested in making money for Microsoft, and as soon as that they make more money going direct than they will through the channel, they will go direct. And we've seen it with vendors in the past, but it's a drive for money. I mean, the whole thing is driven by making and optimizing profit and flipping companies between VCs at the moment. I mean, if my business was reliant upon ConnectWise or Kaseya, or I'd be concerned because at some point in the next, certainly 12 months, 18 months, they're going to flip to another VC, and then the world's going to change again, and and so on and so forth. So, I think it's an interesting and challenging time, but if the MSPs know where they're selling and they know what their market is and they know who they're talking to and they get their story and their proposition right, there's good, solid, profitable business to be had, and let the sort of chaos almost carry on above them.
Yeah, but it's a topic. I mean, regular listeners will know we've spoken. I usually ask that question to everyone that comes on, and I'll say sales and marketing for MSPs is always, it's either that or recruitment, but that those two are the kind of big hitters that keep coming back up. So, and you've explained the reasons, why that is a challenge, or some of the reasons. But I mean, what can we do, I guess what can be done about it? And I guess what are you doing about it in terms of you off of MSP? If a new MSP came to you into kind of that sort of mindset, which you said you have to kind of change, what does, if you were talking to a new MSP at an event or through a consulting session, what would you kind of start with?
I think, I mean, fundamentally, it's down to them understanding their market. Now, I'm the way that I approach it is very much from, you're a technical person. So, fundamentally, I think I'm right in saying that your background is technical. So psychologically, there's a gap because, I see the world slightly different to you see the world. And there's no point in me trying to get you to understand the sales psychology in some respects. And I don't think sales is anywhere near as difficult as lots of people would, who sell you thousands of pounds worth of training would like you to believe. But nevertheless, there's an attitude there. And one of the, I think one of the biggest challenges for a lot of them is it costs money. And there's no guarantee. So there's no silver bullet. But they've reached their one and a quarter million pounds without having to pay for sales, only their own time, typically, which they don't tend to value. Yeah, so you know they'll do it in their own time and they don't put a value on it. And as soon as you want to do more, then your cost of sale goes up. Your profitability will be impacted initially, but that's not a problem if you have a plan. So I tend to start with, where do you want to be? And I look at numbers, I keep it high level, but I look try and look for people to grow 100% in the next 3 years. So over the course of that 3 year period, they have to grow at 22% a year to actually, you know, because of compound growth and all this. So what do we need to do to that? How many seats, how many new clients do we need to achieve that number? And then work backwards and then tune everything to delivering that number. And typically it's not, once they actually see it, it's not massive and they can, you know, sort of tune it back. But nevertheless, there's still a cost. And so, I mean, notwithstanding there's a cost for me, but I mean, if we forget that, I mean, you know, you've still got a cost for ramping up your marketing. You've still got a cost for the lead generation. And that could be, I mean, I had a spat recently, not so recently now, on LinkedIn with somebody because I said a lead is going to cost you £1,500. And I was told that that was nonsense. But in absolute terms, you know, your leads are going to cost you £1,500. By the time, if you do it and you keep repeating it, that cost will come down. But to win a contract that could potentially be, I mean, even at the smallest, the £12,000 a year for the next 3 or 4 years, I mean, £1,500 is neither here nor there. But it's having the strength within the business to be able to do that, to take that risk, to invest that money looking forward. And a lot of them have done it on their own and it's failed. So, you know, I say one of the two best ways of generating leads are email and telephone. Proven year after year after year. And they say, well, we've done emails and it didn't work. Because they might have done it once. You know, they've sent one email and it didn't work. Or, you know, they try and pick the phone up and do the calling themselves, which they haven't had the experience nor the training for. So, you know, you've got to get all of those things. So I tend to refer to it as being sales ready. So do you know your market? Do you know what you're selling? Do you know who your clients are, how big they are, what the market is? You know, you have to niche. You have to, I don't like niche. I tend to call it a target market because I think that's more English than niching. But so you need to know who your target market is. You've got to have a system to record everything that's going on and you've got to be able to build a pipeline. Now, none of that is complicated. And in some respects, once it's up and working, it's quite boring. But unless you get that tuned properly, then it's always going to be bits of business from here and bits of business from there. And it's far less efficient if you're having to repeat and reinvent your story and your sort of collateral and things. If every time you talk to a client, they're different. You know? If I told you, if you targeted 50 companies with a rifle as opposed to 500 companies with a shotgun, you'd be better off. The only way I can prove it is to do it. Okay? And there's this whole kind of tendency of, because you're restricting the number of sort of people that you're targeting, that you're reducing the opportunity when in fact, you know, you're just tuning it and making it that much more effective. And that's, you know, it's a lesson in sales across, doesn't matter, you know, what your market is, you have to know who your clients are. I know who my market is. I can tell you more about MSPs between £1 million and £1.5 million. And as I said before, you know, sort of 2.5 and a bit more than in some respects they know themselves. I can't tell you how their PSA works, or I can't necessarily answer the phone and get a network working. But when it comes to systematically working with their existing clients and going out and winning new clients, then, you know, it's straightforward. As I say, if anything, it's a bit boring, but and you've got to keep repeating it. I mean years ago I wrote some blogs for your old website, didn't I? And I did one, and what be, you know, sort of became apparent to me is psychologically we're different. So if you've got a network that doesn't work and you try something and it doesn't fix it, then you try something else. And then if that doesn't fix it, you try something else. Now, there's no sense at all in going back to the first thing that you did and trying that again, because it's not going to work. Whereas I can send an email every day this week to the same people, exactly the same email, and get a different response on every one of the 5 days. Some of it's because of the day. Some of it's because of the mood of the person. Some of it's because something has happened during the course of that day that, you know, will resonate. If I phone them, you know, you phone them and you'll get a different response most of the time that you phone them. So, you know, what you're doing is you're consistently going back and doing the same things or trying the same things or slightly nuancing them to get the conversation, because all we're after is a conversation. You know, we're not going to sell something off the back of an email, but what we're looking for is to sit down and have a conversation.
Yeah, and I do remember that article. In fact, I'd even written it down here. I was going to mention it if you didn't, because it is a mindset thing that I remember thinking that you mentioned that the majority of MSPs are kind of technically owned or founded. And in that mindset, like you say, with the server or a problem that from a technical point of view, you try something, it doesn't work, you don't try that again, you move on. Whereas from a kind of sales and marketing point of view, you kind of do have to keep repeating the same things and you will get success. So it's a fundamental kind of mind shift that that sort of MSPs need to go through, which is really interesting. And obviously, I'll put all your details in the descriptions below, but if there are any MSPs sort of listening that are interested in sort of speaking further, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
The best thing to do is either, I mean, I always say this because it's an interesting test, because I put a lot of effort into networking and LinkedIn and things. So if you go to LinkedIn and put my name in, I'd like to think that I'm the first Paul Lloyd that appears. And I'd like to think, certainly with the MSP community, that I'm no further than your second connection, because if I don't know somebody who knows you, then I'm not doing my job properly. So that's the one route. The alternative then is paul@sellerly.co.uk. So, you know, I mean, sellerly.co.uk is my website. It's nothing fancy. It's just a brochure on the web. An email to that will do that. And then, you know, I'm genuinely quite happy to speak to anybody that has an issue, because if I can help point somebody in the right direction and they, you know, have some success with it, then that's satisfying in itself. I mean, I'm not one of these people that there are a number of them around who sort of want to put you on the clock the first time you speak. You know, if I can help you out, if I can point you in the right direction, you know, whether it's by email or on the phone, I will do that, because I get my kicks out of people getting better and their businesses growing, and however small my input is to that. Essentially that's what I do. If you wanted to, I mean, I'd be disappointed if a lot of you don't get my emails anyway, but subscribe to my various emails that go out. I'm just trying a 5 lead gen tips. So I'll be sending out 5 lead gen tips once a week, which has been out 5 on Friday until tomorrow. And I've got another fancy title for something on Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday Wizard or something. And I'm trying to see which one works best. But the whole idea is that, you know, it's just 5 straightforward tips for lead generation, because that seems to be the one thing that everybody has in common and all anybody ever talks to. When I work for a vendor, if you go and talk to any partner, whether it was Computer Center, Softcat, or any one of the small MSPs, the first question you got asked was, how can we help you more leads and more margin? And that was it. So, well, we've got all of this that we can offer you. We want more leads and more margin. Leads tends to be, and it's not, again, if you set it up properly and you do it properly, generating leads is relatively straightforward. It's just a bit laborious, but it takes time. And I think that's the bit that people don't appreciate is the length of time that it takes to warm somebody, you know, sort of nurture somebody to the point where they, you know, they want to do business with you. But, you know, as I say, LinkedIn or the website was nice, straightforward email address.
Great. Well, I'll certainly put those into the description below. And personally speaking, I know that you're kind of very generous with your time, so I'm sure that people would appreciate that. But unfortunately, I think we've hit the end of the time we've got allocated for this, which is great. I've learned a lot, as I say, about your career and everything. Maybe we'll get you back on at some point to go through the rest of the questions, because we didn't quite get to find out about your other go-to books and podcasts. But obviously, we know about The Archers, so we'll take that one for the time being. But with that, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today, Paul. I'll, as I mentioned before, I'll link all of your info into the description, and hopefully you can have some more interesting conversations with some MSPs.
All right, that's great. Thank you. And thanks for your time.
I'll speak to you soon. Cheers, Paul. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We really, really do appreciate it. Please continue to like, subscribe, all the kind of things you can do to help share the podcast, because we want to get it to as many MSPs as possible. But until next time, goodbye.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by Jump Cloud for MSPs. Jump Cloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using Jump Cloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.